And our time is concluding. And if we are leaving our radio audience, I would like to say to you, WJR, is it? Yes. Thank you. Thank you. We thank you and appreciate your station. And we appreciate the audience for listening. And we hope to be in your area again. Now, let us continue now. Because you have a few more minutes, can you give me 15 more minutes? Allah Akbar. Praise be to Allah. Now, I'm convinced that we are moving into, growing into a satisfying racial identity. We are growing into that. See, but you know, you can become so hungry for a thing to get it, and you can start going after it. You become so hungry and so driven by appetite for it that you become unconscious of the fact that you are making progress toward it. You're just so desperate for it, you lose awareness that you're making progress toward it. Many men lose getting a good girl or a good woman because they're so hungry and desperate to get her. They can't see that they have made some progress toward her. Sometimes you just have to take it easy, man, and cool it, and let her digest what you've done already. And I think that's the state we're in as a people in America. We are so desperate to prove the excellence of our race. We are so desperate to establish for ourselves a strong black identity that we have lost consciousness. We have lost our awareness. We have forgot the great progress we have made toward building that identity. Booker T. Washington said in one of his lectures, he said that what some have and others don't, and what people need is an idea of life. An idea of life. Now, to me, that man carried us further in the road of progress toward realizing for ourselves a comfortable, satisfying identity. What I'm saying, and then I'll continue to argue the line of argument. What I'm saying is this, that identity is something that you don't go and pick up. It is something that you grow naturally into. But if you're making more effort to pick it up than you are conscious of growing into it, you won't have it consciously, and therefore you're burdened and frustrated and distressed. Because you can't enjoy a satisfying identity. That so-called identity crisis we suffer is not because we don't have identity. It's because we are falsely trying to acquire identity. You don't acquire identity by saying you're black. You don't acquire identity by saying you're better than somebody else. You acquire identity by trying to live human excellence in the fullest measure possible for yourself. So we'll never come into this collective identity until we inspire individual effort on the part of all our individuals to live the best possibilities for yourselves individually. And don't forget your forefathers, your foreparents. Don't forget Africa. Don't forget what continent you came from or you were brought from. Don't forget that. You see, have a day in the year to celebrate your excellence on that continent and your excellence here. Reconcile the life of the mother continent with your place or your land, with your place in America. Reconcile the life of African Americans here with the life, the excellence of that continent. Have a day that will encourage us, a festive day, a day of festivity. Have a day that will encourage us to salute the excellence of the African continent, going back as far as we can go in history. And to salute the excellence of the African Americans that have done a marvelous job of proving themselves to be a wonderful human creation since slavery, which is only 100 and a few years ago. Don't you know history can't show us the people that have been put so down, that have come so up just in 100 years from that kind of slavery? To me, that inspires identity. That is my identity. My identity is a conqueror. A conqueror. What did I conquer? I conquered the attempt of a man and a race to put me beneath what I really am. I conquered it. I survived it. And now I stand with him. Huh? And he has to treat me not as a slave, but he has to treat me now as an equal. Now, don't think I don't know what I'm talking about. Don't think I'm cracking in the dark. In 1975 through 65, through 85, I was battling the darkness. Anybody think I'm battling the darkness? Nah, man, you ain't know. You don't know what's happening. No. Now, let me help you understand what I'm saying. Races of people have evolved their identity with the help of lies. They don't call them lies, they call them myths. They have the myth of their origin. It's a story, it's a fairy tale about their origin. The Greeks had all kind of myths, ancient Greece. They had all kind of myths about their origin. Once one nation state would establish itself independently, then that nation state would redo the myth. And will come up with its own individual myth for its origin. The Romans grew to be a great, great power on this earth. Ancient Rome, the Roman Empire, were at one time ruling the known world. And they traced their origin as a people back to something that gave them a sense of superiority. And their beginning really is a beginning that we pity, a beginning that hurts our heart. Two boys left without parents in the wild. And they were so young that they needed to suck the tit to survive. A wolf found them and nourished them. And they survived to become young boys and eventually young men. From the one who defeated his brother, because his brother was too silly-minded, too petty-minded, he became the ruler or the leader or the original type for all the Romans. His name was Romulus, from which they say they get Rome and the Romans, etc. Two males that survived the wild, suckled a wolf, nursed on the breast of the wolf. You know, so what are they saying to other races? Look, we survived without human care. That's what they're saying. And the Romans are known to put fear. They want to strike fear in the hearts of the people they want to conquer. They first want to strike fear in their hearts. I studied the Roman army. And the Roman army, they say that half the battle was won before they got to the enemy. Because they would stomp hard on the ground when they coming. They stomp real hard. And they would amass all the men they possibly could. So it sounded like a great, gigantic, prehistoric creature was coming their way. And he probably was that prehistoric creature. He was coming their way, you know. Boom, 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 boom. And then they have drums hitting with the foot of the beat to exaggerate. Boom, boom. Or to get added volume. Boom, 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 boom. And another thing they would do later, not only the Romans, Greeks, but mostly Europeans, they would have some corpse or something on a pole and have it raised up high. So you're looking at something they already killed before they get to you. So telling the story of their beginning, that even as little babies, we survived the wild. We were raised by a wolf. But for the higher minds of the Romans, it said something else. The wolf is an excellent social leader in the animal kingdom. Excellent social leader in the animal kingdom. Not only the mother takes care of the babies, the father too takes care of the babies. The father and the mother, the male and the female wolf, are devoted to the care of their babies. He won't only go out and help her get food, he also will help her care for those babies. He doesn't have tips to give, but he will do all he can to help care. He watches and cares for the baby just like the female. The wolf is a highly evolved social animal. Social animal. So that was the greatest message for them. They were saying that we are a people, or a nation, that highly value our young, our children, our families, our homes, our social life. And they saw that as their identity. Now, if the Romans could go back and look to their social excellence and get a sense of identity, a sense of nation, a sense of people, a sense of race, how come we can't go back, which I'm going to insist we do, how come we can't go back and get the excellence of our people during slavery and after slavery? Identify that excellence and make it a part of our propagation. That the message of that excellence is given to people all over the United States. If we can circulate papers all over the United States, we can circulate messages that help us see our identity all over the United States. We don't want to show something that we have to get. We want to show something that we've been growing into. Believe me, people, we are not a pitiful race. We are not an inferior race. We are a great race. We are a great people. But we have been so confused by the white man's lies against our humanity, against our worth as a human being. We've been so burdened and so confused by it that we have got out of contact with the conscious, out of conscious contact with the progress we are making as a people. Colin Powell, he speaks for a great people, not just for a great individual. He had to have some great people helping him to be Colin Powell. And he's just one man. I could mention all of them. We have a great woman now. She soon will be seen in the National Focus. She's already in the National Focus. She soon will be very strong in the National Focus, because I believe she's going to become first African-American senator. Just a long time. She's going to become senator. Out of Illinois, out of Chicago, Carolyn Moseley Braun, African-American woman. But she hasn't got to where she is and to where she will go soon to a seat in the Senate, I don't think. I know she hasn't, without the help of great people. Our great individuals speak for the people. There must be greatness in us to produce such great individuals. Wallace D. Muhammad can't be the son of anybody. Wallace D. Muhammad had to be the son of two particular people. Yes, if we can go back and study the development of our excellence and identify for ourselves what we would like to see as our main characteristic. Identify it for ourselves. That's the only time we're going to be comfortable. The white man called us niggas down south and up here too. And then later got ashamed of calling him, and he dropped it and just called him Negro. But we weren't happy. We weren't satisfied in here. Something in here, we just wasn't satisfied with it. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad inspired the African-American people over here in these United States, by James Brown. To sing his statement and put music and soul and spirit to it until you accept it. I'm black and proud. That's what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was saying for all those years. I'm black and proud. We are black and proud. We are the black man. We are the greatest. That's what he was saying. Black and proud. James Brown got the message and he put it in the song. I'm black and I'm proud. I'm black and I'm proud. I'm black and I'm proud. But he weakened it a bit by saying, I'm black and I'm proud. He should have just said, I'm black and proud. I'm black and proud. But he said, I'm black and I'm proud. I'm black and I'm proud. I believe that the song says, I'm black and I'm proud. Not, I'm black and proud. He might say it, but I think it's, I'm black and I'm proud. Now, if he says, and I'm proud, so he weakens it. It says that the person is trying to convince themselves. I'm black and I'm proud. That's another expression of that confrontation kind of thing we got with the white man, you know, with the racist. White man, you see, I'm black and I'm proud. I'm black and I'm proud. No, it's not to say I'm black and proud. I'm black and proud gives equality to black and pride, doesn't it? But I'm black and I'm proud, doesn't it? It separates the two. It puts them in two dependent. It makes independent the two statements. I'm black and I'm proud. You give independence to the second half, which means that one is trying to take care of the problem in the other. I got a problem with being black and I'm proud. And the behavior of our people on the whole says that that's just what it is. We're calling ourselves black, but we're calling ourselves black defensively. And this is what Shelby Steele brings out very clearly. We're calling ourselves black defensively. The white man said you're black and ugly, so defensively we say, I'm black and proud. Well, battling on a child's battlefield. That's battling on a child's battlefield. The dignified person, he doesn't reply to such ignorance. White man says you black and inferior. He doesn't reply to that ignorance. Instead, he treats the victim, who's not you if you keep your intelligence. The white man is the victim that expressed us foolishness. Instead, he treats the victim. He treats the victim by analyzing the victim. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad came in a mysterious way, and a white man, a white reporter told me this once. He said, you know, glad to see you. He said, because Malcolm scared the hell out of us. He said, and your father mystified us. Now, I left him there. I knew I wanted to disturb his peace, but I left. I wanted to tell him, you ain't got that right, mister. Elijah both scared the hell out of you and mystified you. So because Malcolm wasn't doing nothing but carrying that fright. That thing that frightened you was put into him by Elijah Muhammad. We're going to conclude in a few minutes now. So I'm going to just get back to identity now. Identity is not something we go and pick up. It's something that we have already. When we identify ourselves as a universal person, we are not creating something or making something. We are identifying what we find when we study our excellence as a social group. When we study the excellence of all people as a social group, we identify something that is common in all people and something that accounts for their greatest possibilities as civilization, our greatest progress as a civilized society. If we understand it correctly, Allah is telling us that it is a foundation for all other establishments. Establish what you are universally in your excellence. That is the foundation for all other establishments. Now, when we are looking for our identity as Muslims, we're looking for the Khalifa, right? We're looking for the Khalifa. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could sell all African Americans? In fact, we need to take it to Africa too, even to Muslim Africa. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could sell all the family tree of the African, the blacks, on identifying ourselves firstly as the Khalifa? Do you think a Khalifa could stand to just beg and beg the White House and the government? To give charity until we're all right? Give charity until we're happy and well off? Or share the taxes with us until we are happy and well off? Do you think a Khalifa could do that? Who's told that he was created for the purpose of caring not only for himself, but for all people, animals, plants, even the atmospheric condition. It would be wonderful if we could sell our people on identifying as the Khalifa. It'd be wonderful, but we can't. That's not it. Prophet Muhammad, he didn't tell the Arabs to identify as the Khalifa. He left them to identify as Arabs. The tribes to keep their tribal identities. The Arabs to keep their Arab identity. But he said something to bring them in the spirit of the universal person. He said, there is no superiority of a black over white. And look, he didn't see the European, the Caucasian people as white. He saw them as red. The original Arabic says red, not white. But since they have come into recently, there's this new reawakening. They're even making the Arab change the Arabic now so it says white. Because I've already seen Arabs. Because you know they quote hadith now, and they don't go and quote from the source. They quote from their knowledge of the source, or from their memory or recollection. And they quote it and they write it freely now, many of them. Only the very disciplined scholars will go back and get the exact quote from the original. Common quotes, they just quote them freely now. So a lot of quotes we're hearing, they're not perfect. They're not quite correct. A lot of quotes we're hearing now are not quite correct. He called them the red people. He didn't even know white, nor white people in his language. That was black, that was brown, yellow, red. He didn't know white people. Now you say, why would he call white people red? Why do they call all of us black? Yeah, why do they call all of us black? I'm brown in the mirror, that's how I say. If somebody asks me my complexion, I say brown. But when they ask me my race or what people I are, I have to say black. And I got a daughter that's as white as many white people And she came for me and my wife. And my wife is just by my color. But obviously, in our genetic past, there's some brighter people than us. So she took her color after bright ones in my past. There's white woman behind us in our ancestry. There's a white woman. My great grandmother was a half white. So I guess she took it from them. She's very light. So light until I had a jealous woman once looking at her. And she said, I don't even believe she's your child. So how can a white man call us all black? And he loves to call us all black. I guess we gradually begin to see that the white man loves to call us black, that is making some of us now doubt that this is the right language. For all the work I've been doing ain't helping very much. But right now, we got more of our people that are coming out saying, it's better to call ourselves something else other than this black. Jesse Jackson came out after talking to some other members of the Black Caucus. And I guess they agreed. He came out and he announced and invited us to call ourselves African American. Now, you know that I had been calling us that long before he came, right? In fact, I got writings to show that I've called us African Americans long before that. And I had some problem with Afro-American. Well, I couldn't see why we cut the word short. And the Irish, they don't have to cut the word short. They don't say Irish American. They say Irish American. His knowledge that he brought, his gospel that he brought, the knowledge in his gospel is the flesh of Jesus Christ. That's the only sense that he saw his flesh. And he said, take this, and what is it? Wine in the communion. As a symbol of what? His blood. But he didn't leave us not knowing what his blood was, not his physical blood. He said, to remember what? The spirit of the New Testament. His blood. Blood is just wine. Blood is associated with wine, symbolically. And then wine is explained as the spirit of the New Testament. Flesh is associated with bread, symbolically. And then bread is explained as the teaching of the New Testament. Let anybody argue with that. That's got any sense. Nobody that knows the Bible can argue with that. Okay, so if this is the real meaning of Jesus' flesh and blood, then how come we are given a white man to look at? Hold up now. Understand this, Muslims. I'm talking to you mostly, Muslims. That's why I sacrificed one sister. She's gone. I hope she was just tired. I hope she didn't leave us with her heart, leave or take her heart away from us. I hope she's just tired. But I think that was a little bit too burnt, too the hot. The fire got a little bit too hot. But I'm here to get us home. I'm here to get us home. And I mean in our own house. As the owners of our own house too, buddy. The landlord. Yeah. Elijah ain't in the meat for nothing. That's right. The bit of Elijah I got in these jeans, buddy, ain't in the meat for nothing. There's a reason. All right. I ain't trying to spook you up either. That's why I keep saying to use these scientific terms, genes. I could have said gin. I'll give you something else. From see, those people who fabricated, and I don't mean to say lie, negative. I'm not using fabrication as something lie, negative, total negative. The emphasis is not largely on lies. Those people who fabricated the Bible, the version that we have, their particular version of the Bible. What I mean by version now, I'm talking about the original version, King James and the original Catholic Bible. Those people who did the fabrication canonized the books. Those people who did that, they knew they were getting into some deep and dangerous waters. They knew it. And they tried to do their best to avoid real serious trouble. But they wanted to make the religion appeal to the European who had been idolatrous, pagan, idolatrous. One of their leaders said, "Let us apply what is said in a way to make it acceptable to the Gentile, to the pagans, without losing its purity." Now, how in the world can you do that? You can only do it by exegesis, translation, interpretation, etc. So that's what they do. The wise among them, they apply these skills for reading the truth in the scripture. And they feel comfortable and solid in their position. Yeah, you can't change them. Because they ain't nowhere mentally that where you can get even touch them. They're so far away from you and your mental language, you can't even touch them. They're out of your sphere. So when you accuse them of something, they sit so comfortably. And see, every word is true. Word upon word, line upon line. Yes, by their insight and exegesis, translation, interpretation, etc. So I can take Jesus on the cross as a flesh body that is pagan. It's pagan. Can't get around it. That's the same thing that they believed in before they became Christians. They believed in physical man image gods. Apollo, Bacchus. I could just name them. They had hundreds of them. Had one for the ox, one for this, one for war. They had gods for everything in human form. They had some that was higher than the rest, some that was a kind of universal god. Zeus was a universal god, but pictured as a Greek in their own flesh. So they were used to that idea. So the trick was to get them to accept the message of Jesus Christ by putting it in the language of their paganism. But by interpretation, it wouldn't be pagan, it would be true. It would be true gospel. So I've just explained to you the flesh and blood of Jesus, and as I explained it, we can accept it again. Yes! That Jesus did come to give the world his flesh. That is really his teachings in the of the gospel. And he really came to shed his blood. Shed his blood means let it go out from the body of knowledge. So those that can't handle with their intellect the knowledge, at least they will get the spirit. Right? And they will be blessed too. For the spirit is the life of the flesh. I hope I ain't getting too heavy for you. And if they keep the spirit long enough, the blood will be transformed or evolved into flesh. Huh? Holocaust. Halakha, خلق الإنسان من علق. Huh? And from the clot of blood came a lump of flesh, bones, and finally a man. Well, you all have made me come back alive. Came from all these different places, and I'm seeing my relatives sitting out there, man. You did me a lot of good sitting out there. I ain't gonna name him, he knows what I'm talking about. I got more than one relative here tonight. Good to see you all. And I am gonna stop now, it's too long. So, I was talking on race, and I digressed and went way out in other zones of the galaxy. We even went into another galaxy. So I have to get Enterprise to bring us back now. So let me go back and make one final word on this, on race. And that is this, that the perception of our excellence is the foundation, the base, the foundation that we need in order to see a growing identity, a growing identity. And if we can have annually a day to celebrate the achievement for excellence on the continent of Africa and also here in America since slavery, we can have lectures and festivities and good times and music. That occasion will influence even art. Art in the broadest sense for our people in this country. If we are successful, and we will be, because we are going to invite Christians and everybody, black Jews, Kwanzaa. It's not that I don't know this, but you know when you ain't didn't include it in your notes, so you have a hard time bringing back some of these words. Karinja. Yeah, that's right. Karinja. Yeah, Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa, I got it now. Kwanzaa. Yeah. So I don't care who they are. We're going to invite all our people, to have their own celebrations. Have their own celebration. And the Muslims, we'll have our celebration. They know how to go back to the excellence of Africa. They know how to go back to the excellence of our presence here on this continent. So everybody, let us go back and celebrate the excellence of the African family tree. On the continent and here in America, and I hope in Jamaica and everywhere we are. And I hope we can do it on that day you already got this, almost died. I think it's called Juneteenth Day. Is the 19th of June? I believe it's the 19th of June. Yeah, the 19th of June. So let us keep the same old tradition, the same old day. Let us celebrate on the 19th of June and have a great festive day. Remembering our excellence on the African continent and here in America. And on that day, let us come have a time on that day, maybe we'll have a whole weekend, to listen to our people who would do good, truthful, honest, scholarly research and bring back the excellence of our people from African past and also from the past here, our life, not past, it's still living. We're living in this life here on this continent, and that too is not really the past, it's a living history too on the continent of Africa. Let us bring the best of it forward that we need to help us have a sense of unity, a sense of being, a sense of body as a people. A sense of body and identity as a people that will be comfortable and satisfying for us, that will be positive in our minds and positive in our spirit. We don't need to hear about what's bad happening to us all the time and not hear what good happening to us. We don't want to hear about our failures all the time and not hear about our successes, our achievements. That's death.
One side is death, the other side is life. It's enough just to know somebody died. Hell, don't keep looking at the dead body all the time. Bury it. Yeah. Because we got to live, don't we? Well, I believe that'll do it. Every people have a cultural day, don't they? I don't know any people that don't have a cultural day. But they just give us black history. In other words, they're telling you, you ain't nothing but history. That's your day, black history. You history. Well, hell, we want to stop being just history. We want to be fact of life. We want to be live, living. We want to be future, present and future and past. And we want more emphasis on the future than we want on the past and the present. Don't you know that's what makes a people a great people? When they put more attention on their future than they do on their past and their present. The present is taking care of itself almost. All of us can stop right now, and the present will hold us about as long as the sun will shine for a day, huh? Right. Yeah. Yeah, the present will hold itself because we're already here. I'm driving. Hell, I can let go the steering wheel. I ain't going to die right away. We should concentrate on the future. And that's what I'm doing. And I believe that's what all of us do. Even a car, it doesn't drive in the present. A car operates in the future. That's why I got headlights. It's built to go into the future. Yeah. And headlights is to help your eyes at night, right? Help your eyes at night. And you driving the car, but the car is answering the future. Because your eyes always looking a bit ahead of the... If your eyes ain't going ahead of that car, you don't even turn on the motor. And our religion Islam tells us, dear people, Islam tells us to live with a view on the future. That's why it says the destiny is more important than the now. Plan for the destiny. And we don't know that destiny has two applications or two interpretations. One is that it is the destiny after this world as we know it is finished. The other one, it is the destiny after we come out of our unbearable situation. Yes. When we achieve on this earth what God wants us to achieve on this earth, that will be the destiny as we are to work for it. Now, that sounds like the army Elijah Muhammad, doesn't it? But it's not. Because I don't deny anything that Allah has said. No. Allah is my witness. I don't deny anything that Allah has revealed. But I'm telling you, the destiny that Allah wants us to achieve is the destiny on this world as we can know it or as we can perceive it on this earth while we are in this physical body. That is the destiny. Why? Why I say that? Because the destiny that we don't know, how can we work for it? Huh? How can we work for it except with faith? Just faith in it. So we believe in life after death. That's a requirement of our faith. But should we work for life after physical death? Yes, after physical death of Wallace. So Saudi will have a chance. And Saudi's children, and Wallace's children. We should work for life after the physical death. We're talking about the generations that's coming. But should we work for life after there are no more of us physically alive on this earth? How can I work for that? I don't know nothing about it. I don't know how to work for that. What can I do for that? I don't know. Only Allah can prepare for that. I don't know how to do a thing for that. I don't know how to do a thing for that. Ain't no more people going to be living on this earth physically. I don't know how to work for that. I don't know how to plan for that. I don't know what the hell they'll be in their souls. I don't know what kind of houses they need to live in, but I don't know how to prepare no house for a soul for nobody. I don't know how to what pack the food or nothing. I can't get started at all. I can't even define a national order or governmental order for them or nothing. They'd be nothing but souls, invisible. I don't know what to do about that. So the only destiny I know to prepare for is the destiny that Allah has showed us, and that is make society grow and conform to Al-Islam so that we will have a peaceful order that God intended for man on this earth, where justice will be done, where love will be between man and man, and race, and nation and nation. Where people will live in peace and there'll be heaven on earth. Physical bodies, real human beings. I know how to plan for that, buddy. God called me to that, I can get up and start going. But get ready to start planning for, and nothing but spirits gonna be here. They don't eat food. I'm lost. I cannot help you prepare for that time. Only have faith that when all this world is finished, God will give us a new creation. Only have faith. I can tell you to have faith, and I'm finished for that. I'm finished. But now, if you want to work, let's work for the destiny that I can deal with. If you want to just believe, then I'll believe. I'm believing with you, baby. Believe me, I'm believing with you. But now, if you want to work, let's work on the destiny that we can understand. Now, doesn't that make perfectly sense? Perfect sense. Makes perfect sense, and that's what Revelation is saying. That's what Scripture is saying. That's why the learned white man can go so far with his world, so far ahead of us, and we never see a way to catch up with him. Because his divine destiny is on his earth. He saw the ending in the way, and he started pushing him out of the way. So, hell, you just have to be exterminated then. This is too important for you to be in my way. So I don't care what the world think about me. It ain't nothing but savages anyway. Now, we wouldn't behave like that. Islam wouldn't let us behave like that. And I don't think if they understood their Christianity wouldn't have let them behave that way. But they did it. Some of them were just that determined to establish the society they saw as the divine destiny, that they moved everything out of their way and then got us. Say, well, hell, they can help. Say, but it's wrong to make them slaves and to put them in chain and to confine their life to just the life of a beast in the field. Well, hell, they can help the divine destiny by any means necessary. So that's how it worked out, you know, because of some of them, they just weren't in tune with the high purity of the gospel. If they were, they couldn't have done that. When their own people saw that they were way out of line with the spirit and truth of the gospel, they started putting pressure on them, and all it took was us showing that we didn't like it enough. We gave them a little trouble. As soon as they saw that we were going to give them trouble, they got on our side, didn't they? Some of them were great writers, skilled writers, poets, scholars with the pen. They wrote in our defense. Others got out and put their life on the line. Others used their eloquent tongues to argue in our defense in the halls of legislature, and etc. Yes. And what was the force behind all of that good help? We know God, but also was a universal person that's the same color for all people. There ain't no difference. Thank you very much. As-salamu alaykum.
Assalamu alaikum. Takbir. 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 Certainly was well waiting for. And I have a surprise announcement. I kind of held this one back a little bit. But we've been blessed to know that the brother's going to join us again next week at the Terrace Ballroom on Sunday at 12 o'clock to speak about social obligation in al-Islam. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. I want you all to remember that tomorrow we're going to be honoring our youth. We mentioned that earlier. It's right in theme with some of the things we heard tonight about paving the way for our future. At this time, I'm also going to give everybody the opportunity to make another commitment to the Muslim American Community Assistance Fund. You all have received envelopes, and we certainly would appreciate any donations with a comment.